And good afternoon, good afternoon, good afternoon. Scott Spears back with you Wednesday, February the 7th, middle of the week, 2018, 14 minutes past 1 o'clock. You're tuned into the Now program, and we've got a big hour here. We're going to be joined momentarily by Rich Cordray, currently the front runner in the Democratic primary race for governor of Ohio. And then later on this hour, we're going to be joined by Carrie Trantham, who will tell her tale. She's a pilot, former pilot, of surviving the Bermuda Triangle. So we'll have that all this hour. You won't want to miss it. Tomorrow, Lieutenant Governor of the state of Ohio and candidate in the Republican primary for governor, Mary Taylor, at 12:10 to discuss her meeting with President Trump in Cincinnati on Monday. 12:30 tomorrow, Dr. Ron Fineman, political scientist and author, to discuss all things going on politically. And tomorrow at 1:10, Dr. Ruth Westheimer. Dr. Ruth will share her life and times and discuss the upcoming Valentine's Day. Isn't that all interesting here on WWGH Radio? And of course, tomorrow morning, we've got Adam the Computer Guy at 9:10 a.m. And Charlie Evers will be back tomorrow from 10:10 until 12 p.m. So a full day, to be sure, here at WWGH Radio. We are going to take a quick time out here and come back with Rich Cordray momentarily. Don't you dare change the dial.
Everybody's talking about Now with Scott Spears, Monday through Thursday, 12:10 to 2 p.m. right here on WWGH Radio, from legendary comedian performing the fast food song.
Oh, there's what you like. I feel that, you know, fast foods have ruined the world.
Oh.
On the Champs-Élysées, on the Appian Way, there's McDonald's. By the tomb of King Tut, there's a chuck full of nuts and McDonald's. At the Scala, they sing by a big Burger King where the styrofoam boxes go sweet. What's the use? What's the hell? I just heard Taco Bell went and franchised a wing at the Louvre. You know, I could go on and on and on, but that's it. I love things that are topical and that are kind of true.
The legendary actress and the voice of Ursula from The Little Mermaid, Pat Carroll.
What would we do without gossip, for heaven's sake, Scott? Oh, it's naughty, but it certainly fulfills a certain catty side of all of us. Oh, good Lord. When you think of the gossip sessions you've had with friends over the years, it's wonderful.
Yeah.
It's like putting your hands in front of a lovely fire.
Do anything you want, Scott. You know I enjoy being on your show. Look, well, just let me talking and I keep...
It's Now with Scott Spears, Monday through Thursday, 12:10 to 2 p.m. right here on WWGH Radio 107.1 FM. Streaming live on the internet at www.wwgh1071.com. Join me.
Hello, this is Mr. McFeely from Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, and you know, Charlie Evers is a Marion radio legend, and you can catch him right here on WWGH 107.1 FM and streaming live on the internet at WWGH1071.com. Charlie also takes your calls on anything under calling this number, 740-38-9944. Speedy delivery.
The Fahey Bank Charlie Evers Show every Wednesday and Thursday, 10:10 a.m. till 12 noon, and Friday, 1:10 p.m. till 3 p.m. on WWGH Radio 107.1 FM. Hey, Scott Spears back with you here, 18 minutes past the hour on this February 7th, 2018. And as many of you know, we are all excited about the big governor's race this year. So many things going on. We've been lucky enough to have Lieutenant Governor Mary Taylor on this program. We have had Dennis Kucinich on this program. And today we welcome for the first time another one of the candidates for that office to this program. And this race is also of particular interest to us because our mayor, Scott Schertzer, is now the running mate of candidate in the Democratic primary former Representative Connie Pillich, and one of our favorite guests who was just here 2 weeks ago, 40th Treasurer of the United States, Mary Ellen Withrow, is the treasurer for the man we welcome to these microphones right now, former Ohio Attorney General Rich Cordray.
Mr. Cordray, good to be with you, Scott.
It is so glad to finally get to speak with you. How are you?
I'm all right. Pretty well, actually, despite the snow.
Yeah, we had a little snow today, but we're in Ohio. We know how to get through it.
We do, yes.
By the way,
in D.C., they do not know how to get through it. And every time there's a little bit of snow, they would shut the place down to the point where I think President Obama described D.C. as full of snow wimps. So not true here in Ohio.
You're exactly right. Mr. Cordray, you got into this race late last year. Why'd you do that?
Scott, as I look at our politics today, I'm distressed at all the divisiveness and the scapegoating and the pitting people against each other that we see happening. I see it happening in Columbus. I see it happening in Washington. Every once in a while, there's a glimmer of light where something bipartisan occurs. I also see a state government, a state legislature that has not been a good partner to local governments around the state, making it harder for us to solve problems in our communities. And I very much wanted, if I could, to get into the governor's race and have a chance to set a different direction for the state and make real progress for our communities the way we did when I was in office as treasurer and attorney general.
It's very interesting on the Democratic side. We had a new wrinkle 3 weeks ago when former Representative Dennis Kucinich got in the race, and there was a poll that came out, I believe last weekend, from the 1984, it's a 1984 Society poll, that had you polling at 23%, still the front runner in the Democratic primary, Dennis Kucinich not far behind at 16%. Were you surprised when Dennis Kucinich got in the race, and what do you make of those numbers?
So, no, I was not surprised. In fact, I had sat down and talked with him, which is the way I try to do things. But the fact that I'm leading because of the fact that I've served statewide, I'm the only one of the candidates who's been elected by the people statewide, elected twice, both as treasurer and attorney general, and had a chance to actually work with people around the state to try to get results. For example, when we worked on the foreclosure crisis, Scott, as you'll remember, we had Save Our Homes task forces in more than 50 counties, including Marion County. And you'll remember Michelle Pearson, who worked with my office, former Marion County auditor and treasurer, and she did terrific work saving thousands of people's homes around the state. Now, that's the kind of leadership I think people want, practical problem solving, and that's what we represent. And I'm not surprised that people remember, even though I've been serving my country at the Consumer Bureau for the last 6 years and not able to engage in politics. But it feels good to be back in the fray.
When we turn to the other side, Mike DeWine has a pretty substantial lead, current Attorney General. Why would a Mike DeWine governorship not be good, be a bad thing?
Well, I think you need to break it down into specific issues. So we have a state legislature that wants now to take away the Medicaid expansion, which has provided, you know, access to affordable health care for a lot of Ohioans and a lot of Ohio children. And I am opposed to that. I think we should maintain the expansion. That's an issue in this race. We've had this charter for-profit charter school scandal with the ECOT that has 50-some million dollars that we will never see back for the state of Ohio, and hundreds of millions of dollars poured into it before that with apparently fraudulent attendance figures, and nothing was done for the past 8 years in state government to address that. Lots of contributions to Republicans. I think that's probably going to be the political scandal of 2018. And we've had policies pursued by this legislature, you know, continued tax bills that end up giving tax breaks to the wealthiest Ohioans who need it least. And these are some of the things that the incumbent leadership stands for. And I think we need a change in Ohio. And on all of those things, I would produce a different direction for the state. And I think that's a debate worth having. If as it turns out, it's Rich Cordray against Mike DeWine, I welcome that debate. If it's something else, then we'll deal with that as it comes.
If that does end up being the race, Rich Cordray versus Mike DeWine, citing the same poll as earlier, the 1984 Society poll, right now it would be 49% DeWine, 28% Cordray, but 23% undecided. How do you win those undecided voters?
Actually, I've seen other poll results. There was a PPP poll that had DeWine 45, Cordray 44, and we're hearing about a poll done by Jim Renacci's new Senate campaign that had me leading DeWine by a point. I think the poll you're referring to, there was a lot of undecided on the Democratic side that probably would come home after a primary. But look, I think it's going to be Mike DeWine and I ran against each other in 2010. And he beat me by 1 point. And that turned out to be a tough year. Obama's midterm election for President Obama, the middle of the recession. This year is going to be a midterm election for President Trump. There's always a desire to balance against the White House. Ohio voters very much feel that way. And so I think it's going to be a very good year and a very tough race, but a very winnable race. And it's a great opportunity.
When you look at our current governor, there's been some interesting things going on. The Republicans don't seem to want his endorsement, our current governor, in this cycle. What do you make of Governor Kasich's 8 years? What grade would you give him?
By the way, I find it very odd that you have Republican candidates running for office who were part of the ticket where Governor Kasich, you know, got them elected. And none of them wants to stand up with him. None of them wants his endorsement. None of them wants to be anywhere near him. I think that speaks to a real fracture within the Republican Party in Ohio. And, you know, those candidates are standing instead with Donald Trump. And some people are comfortable with that, and some people will not be comfortable with that. So I think it's going to be a very interesting political year, Scott, and one that you're going to have lots to talk about. With your listeners. In terms of Governor Kasich, I'm not running against Governor Kasich. You know, he's going to be term limited out. I don't want to take on more fights than I can handle. I think he's done some good things. I think he's done some things I disagree with. But I'm going to be focused on the Republicans actually running in this race so that we compare visions for how we move the state forward after 2018.
Before we get to the main election, one of the people you are running against right now in the primary is former Representative Connie Pillich. And last Wednesday, a week ago today, she was in Columbus, and she was quoted as saying, "If we want to win Ohio in 2018, Democrats have to understand that we cannot beat Mike DeWine with our own version of Mike DeWine. We need something fresh." And she was asked if she was referring to you, and she said, "I'm not saying that. I'm just saying we need something fresh, a leader who's new." Do you think former Representative Pillich was talking about you?
Yeah, I don't know. I saw that she backed off those comments. Look, she ran for treasurer 4 years ago, and she lost by about 13 points. You know, I don't know that that's the best source of advice on who we should run statewide. I've won twice. I won by 600,000 votes in 2006 to be elected treasurer. I won by 900,000 votes to be elected attorney general. I think what Ohio wants in their leaders is, you know, you could pull anybody off the street and they'd be fresh. But what you need is somebody with a track record of a practical problem solver, somebody who's actually been around the state many times, understands the different communities in the state. Particularly, I would say, Scott, a key thing is the middle-sized towns around the state that are so much a part of Ohio, like Marion, like Newark, like Zanesville, like Mansfield, that have often been and felt neglected by state government, and I would handle that quite differently. So, look, I believe that I have both a vision and a track record that Ohioans will like. My work, as you know, has been focused on kitchen table issues that affect people's economic lives. And that's what we're going to focus on, Betty Sutton and I, as a strong ticket for governor and lieutenant governor. And then we will have debates about these issues over the next several months. And I welcome that. I think that's good for the voters.
Have two questions I want to get to here. One about the governor's race still. That comment, even if she's not referring about you, why make a comment like that about another Democrat? She obviously was referring to some Democrat.
Look, again, I don't speak for the other candidates. They speak for themselves. Some people like to take shots at other people. That's not generally my way. I'm going to take the high road in this campaign. I want us all to be able to be united when we come out of this in the spring, and we need to do that to beat the Republicans in the fall. It's never been a big problem for Democrats to have primaries in the race for governor. I think every Democrat who's been elected governor in the last 60 years had to fight through a primary. That's good for you. It tunes you up. It makes you get your message out and get working in the spring and not waiting till the summer and fall. I welcome that. I welcome the competition. And then the important thing is that we'll be able to come together and win in the fall. And I think comments that pick at the other candidates generally are not particularly helpful, and it's not my style.
If, by chance, we don't know what will happen in the primary, if you are not the candidate, will you support the Democratic candidate?
I will, and I expect and intend that they will be supportive of me, too.
Final question. This has to do with our president. You've spoken about him recently, you being a former attorney general, law and order man. When you hear everything about the Russian allegations and just the things in general that the president's doing, what do you make of President Trump?
I think the allegations are very troubling. I know they're being investigated closely by the FBI and the special prosecutor. That's a process that I respect. It needs to unfold, and we'll know what we know when they're ready to reveal it. Confidential law enforcement investigations need to be treated with great respect and deference, and they will either clear people or they will implicate people, and we're going to see a lot of that over the course of the year. We've already seen Paul Manafort and Michael Flynn being charged or indicted. I think we're going to see more. I think people are not going to like it. You know, how it will affect the administration remains to be seen. But it is not a great chapter in American history to have so many people close to the administration under criminal investigation and potentially criminal charges. It's not a good thing, and it harkens back to the 1970s and the world of Richard Nixon and Spiro Agnew.
We do have 90 seconds left, so I want to ask this final question. Not necessarily about what Representative Pillage said, but for people who believe that you are the Democratic Mike DeWine, why are you not? What is the difference?
Look, I think Mike DeWine and I have many disagreements on policy. I already sketched out disagreements on health care, on education, on tax policy. And in my case, I have spent the last 7 years fighting for consumers, not only in Ohio, but across the nation. We put back $12 billion into the pockets of 30 million Americans and gave people a voice to get problems solved. As Attorney General here, I brought back money for the Ohio pension systems and for businesses and taxpayers, $2 billion from Wall Street, holding them accountable. As State Treasurer, I revived a program that Mary Ellen Withrow, the co-chair of my campaign, originally founded to help small businesses expand employment and grow jobs in Ohio. That's something we can do more of in state government. That's my track record. My vision for Ohio is similar, to fight for Ohioans, to expand economic opportunity, to spread it out across the state, particularly to those mid-sized towns and smaller towns around the state. And I think that that's a good vision that we're going to be promoting throughout this spring, summer, and fall. And I look forward to having that discussion. I think it's good for voters to have competition so that they have a choice, and they're going to have a choice here.
It's very interesting. 2 weeks ago, we had former Governor Ted Strickland on and Mary Ellen Withrow on, and both of them are with Cordray in this race. And it's always fun to have people on. This is your first visit, Mr. Cordray, but I hope not your last.
I'll be glad to come back. And those are two great people that you just mentioned, and I respect them enormously. Thank you.
Former Attorney General Rich Cordray and current candidate in the Democratic primary for governor of Ohio here on WWGH Radio. And we continue on a very interesting conversation. Now, we are going to have this discussion now about the Bermuda Triangle momentarily, switching gears as we do on this program from time to time. But fascinating conversation. Get tomorrow, to be fair, Lieutenant Governor of Ohio,
candidate in the Republican primary, Mary Taylor, will be on tomorrow at 12:10 to discuss her meeting with President Trump this past Monday in Cincinnati. At 12:30, Dr. Ron Fineman, political scientist and author, to discuss all things going on in politics. And at 1:10 tomorrow, with Valentine's Day just around the corner, Dr. Ruth Westheimer will be on with us to discuss her life and times and Valentine's Day. That's all tomorrow, Thursday, right here on WWGH Radio. See, for people who say this is not a variety show, it certainly is. Politics, Dr. Ruth, and the Bermuda Triangle in 2 days. You can't beat that. Okay, I think the call is now coming in that we want to take as we continue on here on WWGH Radio. One of the things that has always fascinated so many people is the Bermuda Triangle. And we are so happy to be joined by the author of a book, The Bermuda Triangle, Pathway to Atlantis, Carrie Trantham. Carrie, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
It's so good to speak with you. So many people are fascinated by the Bermuda Triangle. Why did you write this book?
Well, I wrote the book because I had an experience in the Bermuda Triangle.
What happened there?
Well, I was flying back by myself in my Cessna 172 Skyhawk, and I was, actually, I did not realize that I was in the Bermuda Triangle. I never have even thought about the Bermuda Triangle. I had watched the documentaries on television like everybody else and thought, wow, that's amazing. And then all of a sudden I'm flying along and I have actually a life-death experience. It's like, well, you know, I need to get control of this airplane or I'm going to not survive. So the story is actually on my website under the flight, and it was just a very scary experience. And then after I finally landed my airplane, it's like, wow, what in the heck happened to me?
What do you attribute that scary experience to?
Well, I've been on a few documentaries, and I had this one gentleman say, and he wrote a book about it and put my experience in his book called, his book's called The Fog. Bruce Gernon is his name, and he says, well, Carrie, because he had an experience a long time ago also, and he says, I think that what happened is that you flew into a magnetic fog. And, you know, my instruments were crazy, you know, and I wasn't sure if I was upside down or right side up during the time. And it was just a matter of, you know, get control of this airplane or you won't survive. But he puts it to a magnetic fog. Now, I've done a lot of research since the incident, and I think that there's definitely a magnetic anomaly going on in the area designated as the Bermuda Triangle, because ever since Columbus even documented that he had a problem with his instruments, and what instrument did he have but a magnetic compass? So,
for people who don't know, where is the Bermuda Triangle?
Well, you know, I've been asked that, and I think that they say it goes from Bermuda in a diagonal down into the bottom of Florida, and then over across into the Bahamas and then back. But I talk to a lot of people, and I don't think it's a definite, I mean, it's not a specific area. I think it might wander a little bit, you know, because they've even shown that there's, like, Bermuda area off of Japan, you know, where they've had issues with their instruments and this sort of thing.
Why has this become part of American folklore, the Bermuda Triangle?
Well, you know, that's interesting that you should say folklore, but I think you're probably right in a lot of ways, because it's some really dramatic things have happened in that area that have not been able, nobody's been able to explain.
What are some of the things that stick out in your mind that have happened there?
Well, that one is that flight of that entire fleet of airplanes, you know, that got lost and nobody knows where they were, where they ended up or anything else. And then there's been a couple ships that have disappeared that nobody has a clue. There's just been a lot of disappearances and a lot of there's actually been some undocumented things. When I was doing one documentary with the Learning Channel, the pilot that was in on the documentation said that he used to fly cargo flights between Puerto Rico and Miami, and he was always having problems with his controls. So there's just something in that, and they say, you know, I say a magnetic anomaly because I lean more in that direction, but there's been a lot of people say that there's thermals in the ocean and all kinds of things going on.
As a pilot, how do you describe unexplained phenomenon?
Unexplained phenomena?
Yeah, why have people disappeared there? In your mind, do you think they went down? Where did they go?
Well, that's, if I knew that answer, Krem, I would be on top of the world because everybody would be after my explanation. But I honestly don't know. You know, from my experience, what happened is that my instruments went crazy. It was like somebody threw a blanket over my airplane, and I just totally got disoriented. And I was kind of shy because I'm as a pilot, I follow all the rules, and it's like, you know, when I do my pre-flight, I look at my manual. I don't say, well, I know how to do my pre-flight in my mind, and I do this step and this step and this step. No. I take the manual and I follow the steps, literally. And when that happened to me, I thought, crumb, what in the heck did I do? Did I do something wrong? It was like, you know, and they say that you can, as a pilot, you can become disoriented, but it was such a powerful and instant, it wasn't something that just came on, it was all of a sudden I was there. And so I was really shy and embarrassed about what happened to me at first, and then I started talking, and it's like, wow, Kara, you need to write this down. This is something that's not the norm, you know. So that's when I wrote my story down, and it was actually published by Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association. I had a lot of people say, wow, I can't believe they published your story, because it's kind of strange, you know.
Well, the book is obviously the more in-depth version, and again, the book is The Bermuda Triangle Pathway to Atlantis.
Well, you know, the book is actually a total part of fiction about a boat that got caught in the Bermuda Triangle, but, you know, my imagination kind of got away with me, but also I've been fascinated with quantum physics, and that's one thing I told somebody about, you know, all these stuff. You know, documentaries that I've been on, they're basically about the same thing. Thermals, compasses, they don't go into the off side, the weird side, the side of quantum physics that gets into parallel universes and so forth and so on. It's the, you know, and so that's where my book went. My book kind of gets off the beaten track and kind of takes us off into a more sci-fi area. And that actually came down to maybe another explanation that us humans aren't aware of or are afraid to look at. We want to do the logical. You know, it's got to be something that we can understand. It can't be something that we can't understand yet. So my book is going off into an area that we can't understand yet.
How much of the book is fact and how much is fiction?
Well, I really tried to do a lot of research with it. So, you know, and I got into Carl Sagan a little bit about the universe. And then I also dealt with Michio Kaku. You see him on the universe channels and this sort of thing, and he actually wrote a book about parallel universes, about there, you know, now we're not in a three-dimensional world. We live in a 12 to 14 dimensional world. And when you and they've been able to prove that in the lab. So when you get into that, then you're getting into time traveling. I mean, it opens the doors, actually, and I know I sound crazy, but it actually opens the doors to a lot of different venues and maybe other reasons why people are disappearing in the Bermuda Triangle.
For people who haven't heard or read your experience, we have some time here. Take us through the beginning to the end. What happened?
Well, my daughter was up in Daytona Beach, and I'm not a big-time pilot. I'm a single-engine land, so that means I can fly a single. I'm qualified to fly a single-engine airplane, and I can't land it on the water, you know, only on land. So anyway, but I love to fly, and I had my plane, and I was living in Key West, Florida, so I flew up there to my daughter's, and I spent the day with her. And on the return trip, I checked the weather, and they told me that there was that maybe I needed to change my itinerary to fly a different direction to get where I was going. So I did that, and I'm flying, and I had passed Naples, Florida, and I'm flying south, and I'm flying. I want to fly to Marathon, Florida, and then follow the Keys down to Key West. And it was getting dark, you know, and I could see the lights of Miami, and I could see the lights of Marathon, and then all of a sudden I couldn't see anything. It was total black, and I don't know. Somebody asked me, well, how long were you trying to get your, you know, the airplane under control? Because it's like the lights are flashing. I can't tell if I'm with the indicators whether I'm right side up or upside down because they're going in circles. And of course, you know, I think that us humans, we have this unique ability to go into survival mode. And I went into survival mode. And all I could think about was that, you know, it's not my time. I'm not ready. I don't want to end up in the ocean. I don't want my family to go through the stress of my disappearance and knowing that they didn't know what happened to me or you know, because once when you land up in the ocean, sometimes they can't find you right away. And I was going through all this in my mind, and then finally it seemed like I got control and I was there, but I didn't know where I was at. You know, I didn't know if I had floated off into the Gulf, you know. I couldn't get my bearings, you know. And so then I gone on to got a hold of Miami, and I asked this woman, I said, can you tell me where I'm at? And I just had an oopsie, and head me to Marathon. And she did. She gave me told me the heading for Marathon, and she found me. She could see me. Because the first time I tried that, they couldn't find me, the radio, you know, it wasn't any help. So anyway, she told me which direction. I landed my airplane, and it was really scary because I could not. I had to pry my hands off of the yoke, you know, and climb out of the airplane. And all I can say is it was very scary, and I feel very lucky that just wasn't my time yet.
When you were in that experience, and you think that death might be coming, what's the feeling? What runs through your mind?
Did I make my bed? You know, silly things like that. You know, when was the last time I gave my kids a hug? You know, just really insignificant, stupid things. You know, are going through your mind. You know, when you think that maybe you're that this is it, and that's why I think that you know, I kicked into the survival mode where, you know, it's not going to happen to me right now. I'm going to make this work.
What do you think saved you?
You know what saved me is, and I'm not that of, you know, I do believe in a a higher person, and I think that it just wasn't, that's the only thing that saved me. It just wasn't my time.
What put you in that position? How do you explain it?
I don't think there was really an explanation. I think it's just an internal feeling. You know, it all depends on who your God is or where you're at or whatever, but I think that we all, I think even an atheist believes in something, you know. There's this feeling inside of us, down in our souls or whatever, that kind of guides us. You know, you hear of people in car wrecks that are seeing a car wreck that'll lift up a car. I mean, you see these, you know, you hear about these amazing situations from simple human beings, but I think there's something deeper and more soul-searching, I think, within us.
At what point in the situation did you realize you had been in the Bermuda Triangle?
You know what? I never really thought about it until I was writing my story, and then it's like, you know, wow, and I realized where it happened at, and then I don't know. All of a sudden, it came to me. It's like, wow, I just survived the Bermuda Triangle. It was again an inner thing that just popped into my head. It's like, wow, this is what's happened to me, especially after talking to. I didn't talk to that many people. Only a couple really close people did I talk about it. And of course, I realized that there's rules about having about 30 minutes of flight fuel left in your airplane when you land, and you do your flights based on the fact that knowing that, okay, I need to, if it's going to take me 2 hours, I'm going to have to stop and fuel up or whatever. You know, you calculate all of this. And they said, well, how long were you up there? Well, I was up there too long because when I landed, I was breathing fumes, and I did not know that night.
When you found out that you had been in the Bermuda Triangle when you started to write your story, did that change your perspective on what you thought happened? Well, it must have been the triangle.
No. Well, you know what? Like I said, after it first happened, I thought, well, you know, what did I do wrong? I thought I was at fault. And then the more I thought about it, it's like, wait a minute, you know, and the more I talked to my friend who's a pilot, it's like, I didn't do anything wrong. It had to be an outside phenomena. And that's basically when I thought, well, something mysterious and scary happened to me or hit me. And that's when, you know, talking to Bruce Gernon, he was on one of the documentaries I was on, and he came up with a solution that there's a magnetic fog floating around there that you fly into, or it flies into you, I'm not sure which, but that can mess up your instruments.
You know, that being said, the reason I use the term folklore when I referred to the Bermuda Triangle is because there seems to be several different explanations when you say that word. One explanation is there's nothing. It's nothing. It's totally made up. It's a hoax.
Right.
Then there's the idea that it's actually a scientific thing and has nothing to do with the Bermuda Triangle. It's just a place that's bad to fly or send your ship into because of magnetic pulls. Then there's the idea that was out there for a long time, that it is just ghosts. It's ghosts, and things are really not disappearing. They're stuck in there forever, and it's just a land of mystery and intrigue. Where do you fall in that spectrum?
I think since they haven't really been able to prove the thermal thingies in the ocean and the magnetic anomaly. In fact, I was told that scientists have checked for magnetic anomalies in the area and can't find anything. But I think there's a scientific reason. I just don't think, you know, we're young. We're young as scientists. I mean, I'm totally amazed every morning when I wake up at the technology and that we're going through right now. We are living in a Star Wars area almost, you know, Star Trek, not Star Wars, but Star Trek. And But I think that there is a scientific reason. We just don't have the scientific technology yet to define it. And that's why I kind of lean more towards what Michio Kaku talks about, you know, in the, parallel universes and this sort of thing. I think that there could be something out there that's right now in our thinking, in our culture, it would be a myth. We consider it as a myth or a fantasy. But sometimes those myths and fantasies become reality after 100 years, you know.
It is an area that people obviously have been. Do people avoid it? Are planes flying through it right now?
Yes. And, you know, what's interesting is I'm lucky enough that I have a lot of young kids email me. They'll say, well, Miss Carrie, I'm doing my final project or whatever for my sixth grade is the Bermuda Triangle. And listening to what these children come up with is just amazing. You know, the questions that they ask me are just really, really interesting. And that means that the young people are starting to think outside the box.
What is a common thing that these kids are asking or coming up with?
Well, of course, they'll ask, you know, are there monsters there? And some is kind of silly, but, well, in one way and another way not. But they'll ask me if I know the answer. And, of course, I say, no, I don't have the answer. That's why it's still a mystery. But they can come up. I know one young man and I got into a big conversation about the magnetic forces of our planet. And I research, and I Google and this sort of thing. So I told him, I said, well, just Google the magnetic forces of our planet. And it's just amazing, these forces that are coming from the magnetic north to the magnetic south and then hitting the equator, and the fact that we have a magnetic core. And that magnetic core, if it ever stops heating up, well, our planet will probably end once it goes away. So there are a lot of magnetic forces that are protecting our planet, and that's why, you know, I said, well, if I have to get down to the nitty-gritty, it would probably be that there's a magnetic anomaly in these areas.
Would you ever go back through it?
I have, several times.
And what happened?
Yeah, people, nothing, you know. I think it just wasn't my day or whatever. But, yeah, the people fly through the Bermuda Triangle all the time. But there's a lot of undocumented issues. It's like the guy that I flew with on the Learning Channel documentary that talked about that he was having issues all the time flying back and forth between Puerto Rico and Miami in a freight plane.
It's fascinating. Do you think the phenomenon and the questions will ever go away?
Yes. It may not be in our lifetime, but yes. Yes, that's why I said earlier that I think that there's definitely a reason. Because usually, you know, after years and years and years, and we hear about these myths or whatever, then somebody comes up with an explanation for the myth. You know, so the Bermuda Triangle right now, and for the past 50 years, I guess, maybe longer, has been a myth. But at some point in the future, somebody will come up with a sound explanation as to what is causing, and maybe even be able to track some of the people that have disappeared, you know, where they landed in the ocean or wherever. But, yeah, there's going to be an answer. There's always going to be an answer. The answer's out there. It's just that maybe we're not mature enough in our knowledge to know what the answer is.
When you went back on the premise that it's something scientific, that we'll know what the answer is,
yes.
What were you hoping would happen? The times you went back, you said it's just not my day. Were you hoping to experience what you had experienced?
Oh, Oh, God, no.
Right. So what were you hoping for?
Well, actually, I was just flying through I've been through on a single-engine land planes a couple times, you know, just flying to Miami or Fort Lauderdale or whatever. And I've flown by myself a few times. And because that's one thing, is after my experience, even the next day I thought, boy, I got to get in an airplane or I'll never fly again. That was my thought. And so I did. I got back up in the airplane all by myself and flew again. It's like, you know, they say if you get, you know, thrown off a horse, you need to get right back on.
When people say to you, because there has been a lot of talk with other things like this too, aliens and things people talk about and have talked about for years, they say, well, people just make this up. It's just, it's something else they don't want to talk about, or they just plainly made it up for publicity.
You know, that's a good question, because I honestly, truly believe that there's other people out there, or other beings, you know. We're just, you know, when you look at the universe and our planet and how many millions and billions of other planets are out there in our universe, and who else knows about a universe that's way out there that's not even part of our Milky Way, well, our Milky Way system, and then the other universe and all the other things. There's got to be somebody, other living people that are cognizant of their surroundings out there. Our planet is special, and I'm a big reader, and I read a really interesting book about this fact that we have so much water, and water and some other planet didn't have water, so they were trying to get to our planet because of where this gorgeous blue planet sitting out there. But yes, I do believe that there's other people out there. Now, those who say that they've been abducted or whatever, I don't know. That's kind of hard to understand a little bit, because I just think if there were other beings out there, that they would be a little bit more verbal and a little bit more, we could, you know, it'd be like they would show themselves more, or they would try to contact us more. But I definitely believe that we're not the only ones out there, or the only ones here.
So at this point, the only answer is there is no answer.
That's right. And that's why, you know, a lot of these people say, well, Carrie, what causes it? It's like, boy, if I had the answer, I would be a really famous person.
Well, it's been a fascinating discussion. Carrie Trantham, the book is The Bermuda Triangle, Pathway to Atlantis. That is a fictional book, but you can read Carrie's accounts on the internet as well as see them in documentaries. This has been fascinating. We've never done a show on this. Thank you so much, Carrie.
You're welcome. Have a great day.
You too. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
There you go. The Bermuda Triangle, folks. That's what I'm going to start calling this show, because some days I feel like I'm in the Bermuda Triangle. Again, as I said at the start this morning, happy birthday to my mother. And for this day, this is Scott Spears heading for the dugout.
Be here on this planet for a limited amount of time, unless you can really enjoy. So we've got to focus on the things that are real and worthwhile. I would say I should